Welcome to Life Off Screen with Dan and Peggy Ruppel. Thank you for joining us. If you're enjoying this podcast, do us a favor and subscribe to the show and give us a rating. Life Off Screen is produced by Master Media International. And to find out more about Master Media or the Life Off Screen podcast, visit us at lifeoffscreen.com. And now, here's Dan and Peggy.
With us today on the show are Kathleen and Phil Cook, and you're just going to love these guys. We are so interconnected with them because our friendship runs deep with these two.
Yeah, we've been friends for an awful long time. You're going to hear a lot about that during the show. Phil and Kathleen, they co-founded the Cook Media Group in 1992, and through the years, Phil has shot film or television in more than 60 countries, but he's not only shot it, he's been shot at. He's also survived two military coups. He's fallen out of a helicopter. When has that happened? And he's been threatened with prison. And I think that was locally. I think that was maybe in Burbank. But if he can ever find spare time, and I don't know how he does it, he's also authored 9 books. One is called The Way Back, which is my favorite.
So
and he speaks to audiences all over the world on how to get their message out more effectively into the largest audience possible.
And what I love about Phil, he is a rare breed because he has his PhD not only in film, but also in theology.
Yeah, that's really, a strange combo.
Yeah, really fuels actually his messaging. Remarkable. And you're going to love Kathleen Cook. I work with her for so long and by over 5 years. She's a writer, a speaker, and she oversees the casting and creative development at Cook Media Group. But also to what we'll talk about and go in deeper with is just her. She co-founded a nonprofit organization called the Influence Lab, and that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, so I think you're gonna really enjoy our conversation today. Let's just jump right in. Phil and Kathleen Cook all the way from Hollywood. How you guys doing?
We're doing good.
Great.
We're doing good. It's a good day for an interview like this. We're excited.
Yeah.
Good.
Yes.
You know, we were talking about it earlier today, Phil. Of all of our guests, if you took the time that we physically hung out with all of our guests and combined it, I think we've been spent more time with you guys.
Yep.
Talk about a wasted life.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
what does that say about how we redeem the time?
I know. Sheesh.
Yeah. I was roommates for many years in an
office. Yes.
That's right.
Our lives have intersected so many times, and we have such a kindred spirit on so many levels, and we'll unpack that as well. But you guys met in college, right?
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
By random, totally random, totally random.
Totally random.
Really? How did it happen?
I sat next to her at a Vesper service. We had a church service on campus on a Sunday night, and I sat next to her just totally by chance. And this is many, many years ago, and she was wearing a hot pink corduroy pantsuit with platform shoes. And I thought it was the hottest thing I'd ever seen. But she was quite intimidating, so it took me 3 months to get up the courage to ask her out. And even then, I was talked into it by a roommate of mine, so it was very difficult.
Oh, my goodness. Well, what drew you to each other? What did you notice, Kathleen?
Nothing.
Nothing.
No, seriously, I was a freshman, and I just kind of wanted to play the field. I didn't want to get connected with any guy at one time. I want to see that what's out there.
This is the day before iPhones, and so when I called her to ask her to go out to a show for our first date, she said yes because she thought I was somebody else. And there was another Phil on campus that she knew, and she thought it was him. And so, needless to say, the relationship didn't start on really solid ground.
Right.
And yet it did, because I remember our first date together then in the car, feeling and throughout the date like I had known him all my life. And
really?
I thought it was the weirdest thing. And yet I understood, my mother had always told me growing up that I'm praying for your husband. I'm praying for the man you will marry. And so I think that was God's providence in so many ways, in that I felt such at ease with him. I remember him even saying later on, after we had some conversations, that first night I reached over and turned the radio dial on the radio just because I didn't like what was playing. And you'd never do that on the first date. It was like, that's how comfortable. And he thought, that's so cool because she feels so comfortable here. And
but you wouldn't feel comfortable around me, Dan.
I'm telling you.
Of course.
I'm telling you.
there's nothing abrasive about you, Phil.
No, you are.
Yeah.
when I fire people, they have fun. So it's just
right. They leave with a smile on their face. Now, I want to mention that was at ORU and in Tulsa. And Phil, you were a media major. I don't know what they called it back then. They called me media.
It was television. I was communication major with an emphasis in television and film. And I was a I was an English lit minor. So I knew early on writing was going to be a big part of this. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I started off right away in a major. I actually came to college as a piano major. My dad was a pastor. I played piano all my life. I didn't know what else to do. I didn't know what to do in college. And I kind of stumbled into the film and television department. And
How'd you do that? How'd you stumble into it?
Well, it's a cheesy story. I when I was in high school, I had a group of three or four buddies that we made movies. We took my dad's Super 8 movie camera. And back in those days, it was Super 8 film and it was a 3-minute roll. You probably remember, a little cartridge. Mm-hmm. And we would make army movies and space movies and mafia movies. And we made it. Never crossed my mind you could do this for a living. So when I went away to college, I went 1,000 miles away to college, grew up in North Carolina, went to Tulsa. And I thought, you know, maybe I'll have some buddies in college that want to make movies. And so I took my films with me and my camera. And when I was unpacking, literally the first day of school, a couple of the movies fell out of my suitcase. And a guy across the hall, Rod Carlson, I'll never forget, said, "Hey, I'm taking a film class. I can show you how to edit those things." I didn't even know you could physically edit film at the time. And so he went down to the film department, and the professor happened to be there working on a project of his. And we were editing my little film. And at the end of the evening, he was leaving and he stopped at the little editing console and said, he introduced himself and said, "I've been watching your little movie here." And he said, "I've got students that have been taken for 3 years that don't do this well."
Wow.
I said, "Would you mind it if I showed your film in my class tomorrow?" So I said, "Well, sure. If I can sit in, I'd be great." So I sat on the back row, having no idea what to expect, sat on the back row. They showed my little movie. And believe me, it was nothing to scream about. But at the end of the film, they all talked about it. They discussed it. And I have to say, it sounds corny, but I had this moment, this revelation that if I could do something with a camera that makes people talk like this, this is what I'm supposed to do with my life. And I changed my life that day, and I've never looked back.
Wow. And you still have an impact at ORU. They talk highly of you. We visited just last year, and they're still, you're their poster child.
One thing that's worth noting is, 30 years later, I tracked that professor down. He had long since retired, lived in Pasadena, oddly enough. And so back, decades later, I tracked him down. And I made an appointment, went to him, and he was really old at the time. And I just told him the impact he made on my life. I said, "What I do is because of you. That night, you changed the direction of my whole life." And I've always thought, whenever I speak at places, I always encourage them, if somebody had that kind of impact on your life, track them down and let them know. Well, you've got my address, Dan, so you can track me down in the years.
I'll take you.
I meant to you.
All glory to you.
Yeah, that's right. But Kathleen, here you are. You grew up in Las Vegas. I love in your bio you said that it was this transient and shallow kind of culture. It was here where you talk about your lifelong passion for theatrical theater. Is that where that was birthed, or...
No, actually not. You know, I always tell people, pay attention to what your children play with. Because my favorite thing growing up was an outdoor trash can that my mother had filled with things from a thrift store, her old hand-me-downs and things, even her old wedding dress was in there. And I would create these dramas and plays and become different characters in the backyard all day long.
Yes. We did kind of the same thing, because when our kids were born and growing up, I was doing comedy with Isaac Gerfried. So I had all these costumes, all these props, and they would love to get into our prop trunk or costume trunks. And just, you know, like you're saying, Kathleen, just put on shows and everything. Mm-hmm. So was it a mutual thing? What was the idea of moving to LA, that we're going to go out there to Hollywood?
Kind of your hopes and your plans.
I got fired. It's pretty clear. Pretty simple.
Really? Yeah, fired from ORU?
At the time I was producing, a national television program for Oral Roberts.
Live
I was directing
show.
Another generation came in to take over the ministry, and they just didn't like my ideas so much. And I was 36 years old. I got fired. And I knew there was nothing for us, in Tulsa at the time. And I'd always felt called to L.A. But the problem is I'm really good at rationalizing. So We had a good church. Our kids were in good schools. We had friends there. And I thought, well, God, I know you want me to come to LA. Maybe I can commute back and forth. And I did I produced a movie trailer for Walt Disney at the time. And I did 7 round trips in 2 weeks. And I realized, if that's what commuting is, I'm not into that, from Tulsa to LA.
Yeah.
Well, I think what happened was, it wasn't any person that fired me. I think God fired me, because he was just shoving me to the nest, and I was way too comfortable. And so, looking back, it was the best thing that ever happened, but it forced us to actually move to LA. And so ultimately getting fired at 36 was the best thing that ever happened to me.
I mean, ultimately, we really wanted to be in LA from the very beginning.
Yeah. It was
trying to figure out how to do it. And really, by him being fired, he'd had a ticket that week that he was fired to come out to LA to make the final plans for us to move. We'd already sold our house and everything.
Wow.
And that's how God really was preparing us, whether we really didn't know it or not. But by him getting fired, he got severance pay, which allowed us then to
live
several months, which we would have quit, we wouldn't have had.
And then you get to join the Screen Actors Guild, right? When you come out here and pursue your acting. And I have to tell you firsthand, we know what a good actor you are. Right? Actress. Because somebody,
Dan,
remember this?
Dan
shot a commercial for Glory Jeans Coffee in our kitchen. Starring Kathleen and Kelsey.
And Kelsey.
Your daughter, Kelsey,
a
young little actress as well.
Actually, kind of funny. She had done a number of commercials in Tulsa. But as you can imagine, the market is fairly limited in Tulsa, Oklahoma, if you want to go to a certain level. And so coming to LA opened doors for both of us.
Yeah. You know, you're circling back to what you said, Phil, about getting fired is the best thing. And I see God's hand so many times when you get fired. The same thing happened to me. You know, I was co-hosting a morning talk show on the radio, and they fired us on a Friday, and because they were changing programming, because we were doing a lot of comedy and they wanted to go really strictly news. And then on a Monday, I have that conversation with Mike Klossman, which turned out eventually to me working at CBS with The Price is Right. And so it was, truly closing that door, opening another one that was really beneficial.
The faithfulness of God.
Now, so you move out here, and it was, I don't know the date we actually met. I'm sure it was through the Biola Media Studio Task Force.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when was that? Maybe the mid to late 90s?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, we moved in 91. We came to LA in 91. Mm-hmm. So it was probably mid to late 90s that we actually met.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometime in there. And, we struck up a great friendship.
And Biola put you on a lot of panels together.
They did. And I'll tell you, I've shared this with people. You know, as you do, Phil, I've been on a lot of panels with a lot of people. And I'm really fortunate that we get to do a number of them together, because I've always felt that you and I have such a in sync mind, the way our minds work.
We definitely
see our families the same way. Yeah. We definitely see the media and trends in the media and what is bad media the same way. But also, you're one of the few people that so connects with me comedically. Our crazy sense of humor is rare. I only know about two other people in my life, and I know a lot of comedians, but I know only about two others that are just so, it's like we could be at a conference together.
Sickness.
I'll look across the room and I'll nudge Peg and go, I know what Phil's thinking.
And it'll soon come across. Yeah,
soon you'll text me.
Yeah, it's a pretty low bar actually when you think about it, but really, our experiences have been very similar, because like you say, we both had to restart our career halfway through, and
married to great women.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes, I'll agree with you.
You and I both, well, the four of us have all been involved in that to a great degree, and helping Christians kind of raise the bar when it comes to engaging the culture through entertainment and media. So yeah, I think we're in sync on a lot of stuff.
Well, a big year for me was 2003 when I got hired by Biola, and Craig was the Detweiler, was a chair at the time. And we thought we had struck pay dirt when we got inherited you and Ralph Winter as the chair of the studio task force. So in a lot of our different planning meetings and things, Kathleen began to join us. And I am telling you, when I met your wife, I and when when it coupled with the fact that I got some money to hire someone and to be able to think that she would come and work with me. And you did. You said yes to that.
You know, that's cherished years.
And you guys did an amazing job. The two of you running the Biola Media Conference became the largest conference in the country for Christians working in Hollywood. And, you know, you
great partners.
It was just an amazing experience for all those years. And think of the number of people you guys touched because the two of you ran that so well. And it was really an interesting time.
I have such fond memories because how you literally kept me alive with the stash of food in your desk and or was that what was at the bottom of your purse?
Oh, speaking of all the food you have in your purse, you know, the four of us went to Sundance together many years. And I remember we would walk into a theater to see a film and Phil and I would fight over who gets the aisle seat because we probably had to go to the restroom in the middle of the movie. And but we always loved sitting next to you, Kathleen, because we knew you were going to feed us. You know, we'd be halfway through a movie, you'd nudge us and pull out, you know, some trail mix or something, you know.
I mean,
it was always
Band-Aids, cleansers, all these things.
You love flights where some family back there's got little kids who are acting up and they brought nothing. She'll open her purse and bring out toys and give to these kids.
It's
Mary Poppins' magic purse. It's amazing what goes in there.
I know. Right. I know.
You know, another thing, though, that we really have in common is you, like Peggy and I, have really found ways to work together. Mm-hmm. And we've been able to do that. And, you know, through the years, as you work together on more and more projects and speak together at conferences or travel together or whatever you're doing, how has that affected your marriage? How have you grown in that, tested in that, kind of got the rhythms of how to separate work from life or marriage? How has that happened through the years?
There is a whole kind of a theology even written around whether or not you are competing with each other or whether or not you are complementing each other. Mm. And so we choose to complement each other. And I think because he's been mainly behind the camera, I've been mainly in front of the camera, and then both of us have kind of shifted over the years from time to time and understanding that one person is not greater than the other person, but we are working side by side with each other.
Oh, that's good.
I love and that.
I think one of the great stories I have is I remember when I first came to Hollywood, there was a big time talent. He wasn't even a talent agent back there. He was kind of a PR guy, what we would probably call a publicist today. Mm-hmm. And he represented people who were actually not in the industry yet. And so but I knew of him. And all of a sudden I get this phone call out of nowhere one day saying, so-and-so wants to talk to you. Would you be available on such and such a day to come in? And I'm going, do you have the right person? You know? And he's thinking about repping some actors now. He saw a tape of your work and wants to talk to you. And I said, yeah, of course I'll come in and talk to him. And so we are in our conversation. He started out like every other interview type situation and he said to me, so tell me about yourself. And I said, well, you know, I have two children. I've been married for about 20 years at the time. And he said, wait, how long have you been married? And I said, about 20 years. I wasn't even thinking. And he said, stop. He said, I'm about ready to divorce my third wife. He said, I ever wanted in my life was a solid relationship with a woman and in a marriage. He said, I've got wealth. I've got fame. He said, but I've never been able to accomplish that. How have you been able to have a successful marriage for so long? Tell me about that. And, you know, here you sit back. This is that moment where you have that little angel in this ear saying, I'm here for this moment to talk to him about who God is. Mm-hmm. And the other little devil in the same, but if you tell him who God is, he's going to think you're crazy and that you're, you know, one of those kind of people. And so I listened to God. I said, you know, for me as a Christian, the most important thing is a commitment and a trust. And I learned that as a child because of my relationship first with God. So that I was able then to do that with my husband. And I think what was interesting about that is this particular agent, he repped Dodi Fayed, Diane's boyfriend, who was killed that weekend then in the tunnel in Paris. And so he never did take on any actors or anyone because he was so thrown into the repercussions of that accident was about.
Yeah.
I truly believe that God put me there just for that moment.
Oh, wow. Yes. That is incredible. You know, I have found too, we take our marriages for granted, but we forget how rare they are in the Hollywood, or we'll just say the media world in general. Well, the world in general, because sometimes when I meet with the media executive, it isn't my history, my long time I've been in Hollywood. It's the fact when I say we've been married 42 years, it's like suddenly I have just bought myself some credibility, because that's what they don't have. They've got all the power, they've got the money, they've got all that success in the media world, but their marriages may be falling apart, or their kids are AWOL, or, you know, whatever it is.
But it you know, really comes down to what your question was all about, and that is trusting each other, caring for each other, over yourself, loving each other. And that's hard, you know. It's always, I mean, we still get into arguments. We're not perfect.
Sure, sure.
We still have a little tete-a-tete.
Yeah.
And yet I understand too what forgiveness is all about, you know, the importance of forgiveness. And because I think I understand how if we don't forgive, it moves into bitterness, and how bitterness then separates us and becomes actually a poison. That it's so important to understand how to forgive. And so I think your relationship, again, premised on that foundation of God, makes all the difference.
Let me just tack on to that real quick. And that is that when we got married, we were too young and stupid to know better. And
been there, done that.
There is an advantage of growing into the industry together. A lot of the marriage problems I see are people that got married after both had gotten a little bit older, and they had their own professional lives, and they were going in different directions, and they could never really reconcile that. And I think for us, we got married, you know, right after college. I didn't have much of a job. She didn't have much. She was a teacher. And we just kind of adapted to that. I'm not a big work-life balance guy. I'm more of a work-life integration guy.
To this, to your point, Phil, I'm so glad we fought those early battles together.
Yes.
I'm glad we struggled financially where we had one halfway working VW, you know, Beetle. You know, I'm glad that we figured it out together, because as you were both mentioning, that's been the foundation that got us through the hard times, which do come because we already fought that early battle together.
And Kathleen knows full well, because my daughter was in the major with us. So when she came into my office and talked to me, sometimes Kathleen was right there. And I can remember her telling me about this young boy that she just fell in love. I'm not fell in love, that she noticed. And that, and she kind of, eyes kind of glistened and I thought, oh my goodness. So tell me more, because she really was, she had two older brothers. So she didn't always, you know, be Twitter pated around about boys. So this is something sophomore in college. And when she tells me about this young man, and I'm liking what I hear about integrity and different things. And I do this. I literally grab her and go, oh dear God, tell me he's not a filmmaker. You know, it's like, oh, because I'm thinking,
Starbucks.
Literally, I'm thinking our life in the entertainment are the highs, the lows, the feasts, the famines. And what I did is I had to go find her within the course of the week. Such a conviction came over me. And I found her on campus, and I told her, I said, I have to apologize. That was a faithless word that I'd want to spare you. From really that have become the stones of remembrance in my life, to be able to trust God together and find, you know, there's that belt faith. We had to own who we are in Christ during those moments, our identity, when we just, you know, groping for the Lord to really speak, and all these important things that are so foundational. Anyway, so she ended up marrying the boy.
Yeah, and now they've been married for, well, you guys were at the wedding.
Yes.
But now they've been married for over 10 years, and he's a motion graphics editor at Fox, and he makes a lot more money than I make.
So much for my prophetic word.
He's doing really good. I want to go back to, you mentioned travel, and the four of us go to a lot of conferences together. And in America, kind of walking into the conference, you already know what people are going to say. It's pretty much the same things over and over. Is there a different conversation happening? Yeah, I'm not putting it down, but we know what we're going to hear, because we've been in that conversation so long. But internationally, as pertains to media, is there a different conversation going on? Are they talking about different issues?
Very much so. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, at any given moment, we a lot of the things that we do with travel is going overseas to teach Christians how to use media more effectively. And at any given moment, I have between 5 and 10 invitations on my desk to ask us to come over. We've been to Cairo. We've been to multiple places in India, Mongolia. South America, Mongolia. We've been all over the place teaching Christians how to use media more effectively. In fact, it became such a burden financially for us that we launched a nonprofit called the Influence Lab with the hope of raising some money to help do it, because the demand is so great internationally. They get social media, they get video, they get television, they get all kind of media platforms, but they just don't know how to do it. And so at any given moment, we got a call a couple years ago from Cairo. A church of all places was producing 80 hours of television a month to beam by satellite into Muslim countries. And they said, bring us a lighting director, bring a social media person, bring a screenwriter, bring an acting coach. We need to really bone up and raise the level of our skill. So there are groups like that doing remarkable work in places all over the world. And I could take a team from Hollywood every month to someplace in the world to teach media, because the demand is just so great.
Also interesting to see the different cultures. Some are more creative than others. Some are more tech oriented and gifted in the tech fields. And yet I'm always telling people, you know, the business is a collaborative business. We have to have a collaborative team. You have to have a director, a producer, an actor. You have to have all those things. And it's the same way within our faith. We have to have each other from around the world to give us a global perspective and be able to speak globally. And that's where our world and culture is going more than ever today, is a global culture. Yes. When we are producing shows, even within our local churches today, we may have churches from Czechoslovakia or China or Beijing, whoever, wherever, coming in to watch.
Phil, as soon as COVID hit, your whole team jumped into gear in trying to train, you know, churches how to suddenly stream and put their sermon services online. I wanted to get your thoughts on it. As I'm watching a sermon online, which we do every Sunday, we watch about two or three of them during COVID, there seems to be a different level of intimacy with the screen. And I don't know that there isn't a TV broadcast. And I don't know if it's the platform, because the pastor is talking directly to the camera. He's not, you know, there isn't a partition of his congregation. When I see it on TV, I feel the fact that I'm just eavesdropping on him giving a sermon to his congregation. When I see a sermon, you know, where he's looking right at me, there's a different dynamic. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's true. It's a live experience. It's funny. Before the shutdown, the COVID-19 shutdown, Lifeway research indicated that 41% of churches in America had never offered anything online to their people. No resources, no worship services, nothing. And once that shutdown happened, that changed the tune of a lot of pastors. And I've had a ton of pastors over the years tell me, you know, Phil, I don't mind live streaming my service, but that's not real ministry. Online ministry isn't real ministry. And that they've changed that tune quite a bit in the last few months. And so I think what we're seeing is pastors for the first time, and if there's anything that is good that's come out of this virus, it's that pastors have finally realized that that is a real legitimate congregation out there. And I need to be intentional about how I engage with those guys. And what works on the pulpit, on the stage at your church, may not work when 100% of your congregation is on the other side of that camera. And you're exactly right. I'm telling him, get in there close, because your emotion is in your face. That's where the storytelling power happens. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things we've been doing. We did a Zoom teaching with 200 pastors across Russia a couple weeks ago. Last week, I did it with 55 Portuguese-speaking pastors in Brazil, Portugal, and Angola. I did it with 50 pastors in South America. We've done denominational groups all over the country. It's just great to see. And what I'm telling them, too, is that even though we start moving back in the building soon, this is not the time to let up on the gas when it comes to your live stream, because that is always going to be, that's a whole new dimension. And I think it's going to change church forever in many ways.
Millennials love watching it on, you know, they love this format. quite interesting to look at the stats and some of the stuff that Barner Research has actually been doing too on it. I think one of the interesting stats that I've just read recently is how many of the millennials are into the mystical and the mysteries of God, so much more so than the older elders or the baby boomers ourselves. And how much I think it, what's interesting to me about that statistics is futurists. I study futurists, so I understand audiences and what people are going to watch in the future. But futurists have been telling us all along that the millennials are, they know about science and technology, but what they don't know and what they want to explore is the unknown and the mysteries of God.
Yeah, yes. I used to do a seminar at Pastor's Conference called Analog Shepherds and Digital Sheep. And it was a similar point, because the four of us are the TV generation. We're baby boomers. And the way we received content was passively. It was a one-way monologue that we just received.
Well, they called it appointment TV, right?
Appointment TV, sure. But now, as to your point, Kathleen, we have a generation that is used to interacting with their media. They want to speak into the story. And so they want to discuss it. They don't want a nice, you know, three-point sermon and it's like, okay, go home and just follow this prescription. Yeah. But they want to explore it and talk about it and let it germinate and maybe tear it apart and drill down into it.
Right.
Well, I'm hoping this digital experience, this online worship experience, changes a lot of stuff. I have a close friend in Montgomery, Alabama. He's a pastor of a church of 900 people. And about a month ago, he emailed me a message and said, before the shutdown, we had 23 subscribers to our YouTube channel. Now we have 28,000. He said 1.5 million people have watched my Easter message online. He said, we're averaging about 700,000 people over the last 7 weeks watching our online services. Yes. He said, I feel guilty when I say this, but I have no desire to go back into our building. He said, we're making a bigger impact than we've made in the history of our church. So churches that have embraced it and are really seizing this moment are doing some amazing things up there.
Kathleen, I see you with Influence Lab. You've done a number of different conferences online. I've been a part of things too like that, which has just been remarkable.
Yeah.
And to be able to assemble the voices that you could probably never get on one platform has been so beneficial.
Yeah, and you guys are doing a good example of that. I mean, I'm encouraging people that during the shutdown, when you think about, you're worried about your finances, you're worried about the future, most people are hunkering down or pulling back, I'm encouraging people, step out there. Even if it, like these Zoom things, you're not making any money off this, but you're getting your message.
Wait a minute, we're not?
No. Shoot!
Whoa!
What?
Click!
No, just kidding.
But it's a great opportunity to get your message out there to people who would have never heard it before. And so even these teachings we've been doing by Zoom with these pastors, we're actually gaining clients where, you know, it's just interesting how planting that seed, if you will, makes a huge difference during times of crisis like this.
You know, these kind of things, I think statistics tell us that research shows us that these are great because people can actually watch them too on demand. Yes. So usually your audiences grow by 10 times. So, you know, I with Influence Women that I host and then I'm a part of through our Influence Lab, I've been able to do some gatherings here in Hollywood throughout the year. We can't do those anymore after COVID, right? And so I did an online gathering and that thing has just gone crazy. We continue to do one. I'll do one with South Africa next week. I just finished doing a webinar yesterday. You know, we're doing this one today. So I believe that even though there isn't monetary involvement or repercussions from this, that the greater good is that God is being served, and that is our ultimate goal, isn't in life, serve Him in our
skills. And we felt, I know that is a shared love that we have, Kathleen, because we got to invest in that next generation for the many years you and I were at the helm of the internship program at Biola University. And I'm telling you, that was so wonderful because we got to, I mean, when I think about how many, I mean, sometimes we'd have 60 plus in a class. And, you know, we went over resume building with every single one of them a couple times, helped them with interview skills, all these things to do. You know, we leveraged our all our contacts for those, their first steps into the industry. Mm-hmm. And I think all that, even sewing, was we know the reward. We've actually seen it in these young people who've gone on to surpass what we could do. And there's no greater joy. And that's why I love so much what you do with Influence Woman, because that is the heartbeat. And we got to taste that, to see. And and that's my heartbeat with Windrider Forum as the associate director, because I get to continue that same.
Talking a little bit more on the personal side, you guys travel internationally more than anybody we know. When you go on vacation, where do you go, or do you want to just stay home?
Well, you know, it's funny. I had to apologize to God recently during the shutdown for ever complaining about travel. Mm-hmm. I'd love, you know, I've been on three flights since the shutdown and within the first few months, and it's a different world out there. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny. About 5 years ago, I pretty much had a little meltdown, and I thought, if I have to get on another plane, I will blow my brains out. And I just had it. And it's like God spoke to me and said, but you have no other skills. This is all you can do. And it made sense. So I just decided to join the airline clubs. I'm going to buy nice luggage. That's my home and my office. And so I just adapted to it. And I actually, and the cool thing about it, particularly because we do this internationally a lot, I don't know if there's a country on the planet where if we got stuck, we wouldn't know somebody that could come and help us.
Oh, wow. That's neat.
We have close friends literally all over the world. And that's just that's a kind of a cool experience and thing. So we just do what we do. And you adapt to it. You adapt to it. And it is funny. We'll travel sometimes with younger people on our team, and they can't keep up. It's just really fun. They didn't want to pass out, or they just can't do it anymore. And I'm thinking, I didn't guys do this. I just think it was what we were born to do.
And and we enjoyed it. Again, I think that's, again, how God's just blessed us in many ways. Sometimes we'll go into these countries we haven't been to before and go in 3 or 4 days earlier, stay 3 or 4 days longer, and really explore the country. And that's one of the joys that we have, especially if we can go in early. We go to the museums, we get to know the culture, and that helps us then communicate with the audiences then that we need to communicate with as well.
Yeah. And you've got two girls.
Two girls and two grandkids.
Two grandbabies.
They are beautiful.
Yes. Yeah. One in New York and one in LA. One in LA here, or they're both actors. And so they didn't, the acorn didn't fall too far from the tree. So And, but yeah, we've been really, really privileged over the years to have gone to these countries and really been able to explore them and do it together.
Yeah.
Well, can I ask you a question? Of all the places you've been, who or what made the biggest spiritual impression on you? I mean, I know you've...
Besides me.
Besides Dan.
Besides me.
That would be my fault, the question.
I figured.
Yeah, but...
Well, I have one story. We were in South Africa a few years ago, and watching the crowd that was there and looking at it. It's a media conference, and it came from all over South Africa. And I was to speak to a group of the women later on, and Phil was doing some of the main conference presentations. And there was a beautiful black woman there. I mean, I tell everyone her skin was as black as night, and her hair, you couldn't see it because it was wrapped all in these layers of turbans that were all brightly colored. And yet when she smiled, you know, her smile was just radiating. And so I said to somebody there, I said, so tell me about who this woman is. And they said, well, she has an interesting story. Her husband and her own a radio station in Zambia. And so she said, she doesn't know it, but we're actually giving her the award this year for winning the best children's programming within all of South Africa this year for her radio program that they produce. But her husband is in a wheelchair, and she has 19 children of her own, and she runs the radio station and pushes him up to the controls, and yet she has to push all the buttons and pull all the dials, and while he does these amazing voices into the microphone. And and what in it, she said, she's a pretty incredible woman. Her husband's not here with her because he can't really travel, and she doesn't know it. She's getting this great award this year. And so when I was done speaking, she came up to me afterwards and she said, I want to tell you that you have really impressed my life. But I want to tell you that when you go back to the United States, when you go back and you speak to other women, you let them know that they were made of God's rib bone from Adam. They are strong. They are courageous.
Oh, like,
man was made of dust and dirt, but women, they are made of rib bone. You put rib bone in boiling water, and it's still rib bone. You put dust and dirt in boiling water, it's poof, gone.
I love her.
You tell women they can do anything that God wants them to do, no matter what happens to them in life, whatever they do, they are made of God's rib bone. And men, poof, they're gone.
Yeah. I love it.
That is one of the stories and one person that really has always stood out to me.
Yes. Of course.
Of who she was, the challenges they have, and and that always actually excited and kind of kept me going about everything that we go through as well here in the United States.
Those connections, they just fuel our heart, you know, because what people do with the little, and they do so much.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you guys so much. We're so grateful for both our friendship, but also that your hearts have, you know, God has given you talents, insight, wisdom, and that your hearts are to share it with other people.
And to leave it all on the field.
Yeah.
Proud of you and Jesus.
Yeah.
We love you guys. Thank you so much for all you do, for what you've done for men and women here in Hollywood for so many years, and how you have invested into their lives, and how you've made us laugh, how you've supported us.
Hopefully we won't leave it on the field too soon. That's the thing.
Right. Hang in there, because
I don't even want to go into the stadium yet.
So one thing I'm asking the Lord to hold on, because we got to get that trip of Italy still in. It's still on.
Yeah, we still got to go to Italy together.
We've been trying.
This is for Milan in the fall again. We'll see if that comes through.
We'll see. We'll keep that in mind. Okay, love you guys.
We love you guys.
Thanks so much.
Come on.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for Life Off Screen with Dan and Peggy Ruppel. Life Off Screen is produced by Master Media International. Our technical director is Jason Rugg. Please subscribe to the Life Off Screen YouTube channel or subscribe to the Life Off Screen podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to hear from you. You can leave your comments in the comment section. And to find out more about Master Media, go to mastermedia.com. Thanks again for joining us. Hope to see you next time.